insurance are all accepted, there is a sliding scale available. On the web, mountainmtnvalleyhc.org. Thanks, Mountain Valley, for supporting KKRN.
Welcome to our show, Examine Life, on KKRN at 88.5 FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Pat.
And Plato said that the unexamined life is not worth living. So on our program, a couple of Mondays every month, usually, we discuss and examine different aspects of life, politics, health, whatever we come up with.
And tonight we're going to discuss a little bit about communication, freedom of the press, speech, and with the new net neutrality issue coming up on February 26th, we're going to talk about that too.
It's kind of a segue from our crony capitalism we've discussed in the last couple of shows and how freedom of speech is being affected. We're going to end up with a discussion that ties it all together. After the Ferguson incident, wherein the father of the victim on camera voiced his desire to burn the city, a lot was said about restricting this kind of speech, but you want to watch what you wish for. We have laws in place with regard to actions and actually taking people to action and yelling fire in a theater and so on. But speech, you know, sticks and stones, it's something you just don't want to control, because whatever government is in control at the time you think they should be controlling the speech, remember that the other guys will be in control at some point.
Yes, speech is the one thing that is almost a freedom of the mind. What you think, we allow you to speak in this country. You have the right to dissent about the government. You have the right to protest. We get the right to voice our opinions, even if it's unpopular. And if you don't like listening, you have the freedom to walk away.
You know, some of the recent events in Europe related to ISIS attacks or Al-Qaeda attacks, what they're trying to do is terrorize our governments into writing laws about not saying bad things about Muhammad or whoever that they don't want you to talk about or whatever they don't want you to say, and in effect abridge our freedom and control our governments with fear.
And this is all about the freedom of speech and expression. They have targeted the cartoonist, the newspaper, the magazines in Europe, and they are trying to control our Western freedoms. And one of them here is speech.
And speech, you know, nowadays it covers a lot of things. You know, art, that's why they use the word expression instead of just speech, because art is a form of speech, and, you know, texting someone is a form of speech, and dance and lots of other things are forms of expression. And when we start restricting those, you know, we're throwing the baby out with the bathwater, in a sense.
And before we had the written word, we only had speech to communicate. We had orators or philosophers that would stand up in the middle of a courtyard and talk. They would give their point of view. They would try and educate, throw out new ideas. This was a major form of communication, but it was based on the fact that people could not read or write.
And so what was said, because they couldn't read and write, they sang and they talked and told stories to carry on those traditions and basically to do what books do now, which is to pass the information down to their children and their children's children.
And that freedom of speech was a way of communicating, and oftentimes those that could read or write, which were often scholars, priests, people in power and religious, because they were educated to know how to read and write, they often tried to control society through speech.
And generally, that's how they start to control society. If you can start with speech control or expression control, you can eventually get to mind control. And we were having this discussion earlier off the air about one of the parts of the book 1984. The government was not happy suppressing speech. They wanted to change people's minds with fear and intimidation, and there was an example of that in that story.
And many philosophers who were orators, Socrates, Aristotle, were persecuted for their thoughts, their challenges to society or challenges to government. And it was a freedom of thought is intellectual freedom is, I believe, the way we look at it.
And, you know, this business of colleges preventing, in most cases at least, conservative speakers from even showing up on the campus, or when they do show up, shout them down so that they can't express themselves. That's being disingenuous with this idea that college campuses are supposed to be the example of free expression. Whether you like their ideas or not, there may be some great ideas in there if you would just listen. And so stopping one from speaking is going against everything that you say that you are in a college.
Well, ironically, the universities have a protection of freedom of speech for professors, and yet it is these very people who try and control who comes to speak to the students. And I think that's wrong.
And there are cases that have been shown where they prevent the students from expressing themselves when the instructor has expressed themselves and given an opinion.
Voltaire, who was alive in the 1600s, was one of the first people to express the ideas to change government. He was anti-tyranny, anti-monarchs. He didn't feel that they were good for the people. And he was one of the French philosophers. He wrote 2,000 books and pamphlets. But one of his quotes was, "To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticize."
Because that's where it all begins. If you're afraid of criticism, then obviously whatever it is you're trying to accomplish must not have a good basis.
And a lot of the old governments, the tyrannies and monarchs, prevented people from congregating. They prevented protests. They weren't allowed to congregate in the street and express their dissent or dislike of taxes or anything else.
And, you know, some of these freedoms of expression, sexual preference, clothing, head coverings, hair, facial tattoos, the art and the way you express yourself in writing, everyone needs to look at all of those things, including the parts they agree with and the parts they disagree with, because if you truly are a liberal, then you have an open mind to everything, not just to the things that you agree with.
And it gives you the right to invent not just the written word, but a product, to bring an idea to the forefront, because it comes from our thoughts.
And without the ability to express yourself, it's more difficult to develop those thoughts. Most great ideas are a marriage of two different ideas. And you can have a wonderful result when you take a politically conservative person and a politically liberal person, and they come together and bring good ideas to fruition. And if one were to suppress the speech of the other, the idea would never come to fruition.
And the one thing about freedom of speech, hundreds of years ago, it was very localized. We now have 724 news, so that speech is heard around the world, and our right to express it here in the United States is not suppressed, and the rest of the world sees that. That is a good thing in the Western culture.
It's one of the many things that people come to this country for, to live, to be able to express themselves and be able to hear new ideas and hear new things and experience new things. And if it's not hurting another person physically or taking something away from them illegally, you should be allowed to express it. You don't have to look at someone who's doing something that you disagree with.
And you don't have to stand there and listen if you don't agree. You can dissent from that speaker. You can walk away.
Or you can argue with, dissent from the speaker is that. You can argue with them. You can walk away. If they're selling a product, you can agree not to buy it. People complain about Nike all the time, but how many of you are willing to not buy their products if you really enjoy their shoes or something else that they make to prove your point? Because if you're not willing to do that, trying to shut Nike down is not the answer. If enough people don't like what they do or what any other organization or company does, you know, instead of taking the easy route and buying the cheap product, boycott it.
Right. And the natural evolution of freedom of speech rolls into the freedom of the press. It was our only form of long-distance communication for many hundreds of years. People were not all concentrated in the cities, and the only way that people on farms and outlying areas could communicate was by a written word.
And, you know, even back then, which we'll have some part in our discussion later, you know, those local newspapers, they were local. But when we talk about corporate control of the news, understand that those local papers had to make a living. They had to make a profit. And even if they were non-profit, they had to make enough money to support the people that worked on them.
The first newspapers were ironically free. And usually the gentleman who wrote them was responding to politics. He was in a city where politics were paramount. There was either a weekly journal or someone printed a pamphlet. And eventually it evolved into what they called newspapers, papers that were distributed freely to inform citizens of what was going on.
But you always have to ask yourself, where did the funds come from to physically print the newspaper?
These were usually men of means that printed their own paper or published, or they got together. An example was, Alexander Hamilton, John Jay, and I forget the other gentleman, but they all came together and wrote a number of articles together under a newspaper. I'll eventually find out which one. But it was their opinion, and they provided it in this pamphlet, gave it a title, but they all paid for it to be distributed freely.
So it was really more of a blog or an opinion piece than a newspaper.
Yes, it wasn't like what we think of a newspaper today with advertisement and weather and all that kind of stuff.
Because we make that distinction today, you know, when people will call one station too conservative or another station too liberal, you have to make the distinction, is it their talk shows, their opinion pieces that you're talking about, or the news? And, you know, many contend that news stations are biased because of what they decide to report or what aspects of that story they will report and how. And that's where you need to have freedom across the board, whether they have an agenda or not. But there is a problem when a person or a station who says that they're a hard news station doesn't report the news equitably.
Well, news and editorials are different. And I think in the original context of newspapers, they were editorials. They were written by the editor of that paper. There was no other comment involved in the article. Today, we have editorial portions of the newspaper, and people write into the editor. But by and large, the news is totally separate from editorials.
Right. Well, it's supposed to be there. You know, it does get mixed up.
Yes.
But yes, there's supposed to be a separation. And as long as you understand that, then you can listen to the editorial and you can listen to the news. But even when you listen to what's supposed to be a news station, you want to be skeptical. Skepticism is healthy.
Well, the first newspapers were, of course, editorials. But the press, the first one was in 1733, the New York Weekly Journal by James Alexander, was the first opposition newspaper against the tyranny of the British. He editorialized his opinions about what was happening in the colonies as a result of what was going on in England.
And the Independent Reflector in 1752 by William Livingston was a weekly. And for 1 year, tax ought to be considered as the voluntary gift of the people.
And was his, yeah. Can you imagine that in this day and age?
And I thought I was plying this guy.
One of his other quotes was, "Advancement of learning depends on the free exercise of thought. Everyone is free to dissent, not just in religion, but in all else." And this was in 1752, long before we had our Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, and it's that kind of thinking that brought us to the wonderful country that we have, or in some cases had, where there was just total freedom. But even back then, there were always people wanting to shut up those who disagreed with them, probably even more vehemently because people had much stronger religious feelings. And what you had back then with religion, I think you have back now with non-religion. They don't want to listen or let any religious people express themselves anymore. And these people that are doing that don't realize they're going to the same extreme as those that they are against.
Right. And the men such as Voltaire that we referred to before, John Locke and Thomas Paine, they all wrote pamphlets or the press, something that planted the seeds of thinking about a new way of government, not a tyranny or a monarch or socialism, but something that was what we now call democracy.
And John Locke, who believed government should be based on consent, protection of the natural rights of life, liberty, and religious freedom through a system of checks and balances, was called the father of liberalism.
Ironically, he believed in very limited government.
And liberalism is really a relative term. He was liberal in the eyes of the society of that day.
And in one of his big essays that he wrote, it was called Concerning Human Understanding, which is what we talk about a lot on this show. But he felt that citizens should have the right to overthrow their government if that government did not serve them. And that was new. People never even considered that as a possibility, as something that they could do.
And I think it's mostly just because of the nature of governments that existed up until then. There had been democracy tried, but it always seemed to devolve into something else. The Romans, many of the European countries, even the Greeks, you know, came up with democratic ideas, but things seemed to end up in the hands of the wrong people sooner or later.
Well, I think probably the distance we had, having the ocean separate us from Great Britain, was one of the things that worked in our favor, and we were so different from Great Britain. Not only in distance, but in the way our colonies operated, how the people that came here and established the country thought differently than those under a monarch, because they were not raised with that idea.
Well, they had to be self-sufficient, again, because of what you said. England was so far away. And when you become self-sufficient, you start realizing that that's a better way, that there may be times when you will starve, times when you're in danger, times when you won't have shelter, but in the end, your freedom is best. And those things are the cost of having freedom.
And ironically, one of the big campaign slogans was taxation without representation, which is what caused a great deal of our Declaration of Independence. And I believe there's a movement afoot now that has that same slogan.
It sounds very familiar to me. I believe it has the same name as the last name of one of our founding fathers.
Yes, the state of Jefferson has that same slogan, is taxation without representation. And that's where the Tea Party became a big thing in Boston. And we wound up with the Declaration of Independence because of it.
That's right. I think people need to look at each individual thing and try to avoid these viruses of the mind, whether you're conservative or liberal. And listen to all speech, but you don't have to take it all to heart or take it even as information. Just listen to it, because if you don't believe that everyone else has something to say that could be helpful to you, then that means you believe you know everything, and that just isn't right.
Even Thomas Jefferson, who was the author of our Declaration of Independence, he believed a revolution involves reforming not just political and social institutions, but also the minds of the citizenry. And that means that those people have to be on board with the idea of revolting against what oppression they feel, or taxation without representation, or whatever it is that the press or orators are telling them is wrong or unjust. That was what we fought for in our Declaration of Independence.
And that's the only place that I disagree with those young people who changed the world in the 60s. I think the 60s was a wonderful thing, and all of the ideas that they had were wonderful things. But the problem was that they became the government, and instead of doing the hard work and changing the minds of the citizenry, they became the government so they could just force their ideas on the citizenry. And I think that's where they went wrong.
Well, Thomas Paine really wasn't an American. He was from Great Britain. He was European. And I think Benjamin Franklin is the one who actually got him over here. But in 1776, he wrote the famous pamphlet that we all hear about, which was Common Sense, the name of it. And it was the first challenge to British rule in America and the first suggestion of independence. Someone from Europe.
And what the place that I hear common sense coming from in terms of politics these days is not from the party of the left or the party of the right, but the party of the libertarians, where their message is not exciting enough to apparently get them elected to major offices. But they often speak in terms of just common sense rather than a political bent of one side or the other.
Well, this was actually a writing called Common Sense. He did write other things. One of them was The American Crisis, and he actually wrote that in 1777 when he was traveling with the American Army, our colonies' armies, you might say. And it was one of the first written pieces that was read by or to nearly every person in the colonies. And there was a famous quote that came from that, and that was, "These are the times that try men's souls." And I think you could apply that to today.
Oh, definitely. There are so many changes afoot and changes coming up. And I think we're reaching a critical time in our history where we have to make some big decisions. I don't know that we're equipped to do that, but these are the times that try men's souls in many different aspects. Wars, potential wars, economics, freedom, government intervention, all of those kind of things. And so it is a time to try men's souls. We have work to do, and we all need to pay attention and do it and not sit back and watch our 6 o'clock news.
And change is something that happens over decades. It's not something that necessarily happens in one day. The American Revolution took a decade, and it took another. They didn't ratify the Constitution. The Declaration of Independence was, we wrote our Constitution, and it took years to get it ratified by the states. We needed at least 9 states to ratify it just to implement it as our form of government.
And our government was an evolution. We didn't just write a Constitution. We had to go through different shapes and forms of government to arrive at the final product.
Right, right. And it took a lot of writing, speeches. John Jay, James Madison, and Alexander Hamilton were the ones that produced those papers called The Federalist. And that was nothing more than a campaign to get the Constitution ratified so that it could be implemented.
And change some of the ideas about how it was going to be implemented. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. I hope you're enjoying the show so far. We're going to talk a little bit about knowledge and how knowledge is power.
And my imagination will thrive upon that kiss. Sweetheart, I ask no more than this. A kiss to build a dream on. Give me a kiss before you leave me, and my imagination will feed my hungry heart. Leave me one thing before we part, a kiss to build a dream on.
Join the discussion. KKRN boasts a variety of talk radio, both from local and syndicated sources. We want to stimulate thoughtful and meaningful conversation. KKRN can offer more real conversation because we are supported by listeners. You have a voice.
Make them believe they're true. Oh, give me your lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live.
The infinite possibilities of music are showcased by the eclectic panorama of song styles that you can find on KKRN Radio. You won't find our musical explorations on more mainstream commercially driven stations. From classic country to new age, from classic folk to classic rock, from blues to jazz, and music from outside our country. You'll find it all on KKRN listener-supported radio, radio that makes you listen.
When when I'm alone with my fancies, I'll be with you.
Welcome back to Examine Life. I'm Pat.
I'm Steve.
And we're talking about some freedoms we take advantage of, and that's speech and press. And one of the powers of the press came about in an odd form of a European, Thomas Paine, even though he's in our history books. He was a European, and he wrote in 1791 something called The Rights of Man, and that was in support of the French Revolution. And he actually went to prison for that. Because the government there did not like, they didn't have freedom of speech or freedom of the press.
They were a more highly evolved and mature form of actually what happened in the South during the years of slavery.
Right. And so that was in 1791. He wrote that about the French Revolution. But it actually was in support of adding the Bill of Rights to our own Constitution.
Right. We had already had a government. But it needed to be changed. The individual rights and the rights of the states had really not been described or set up correctly, and so it had to be reconfigured, and the Bill of Rights didn't come along until then. There was a government prior to those.
It was 1789 that James Madison, who was our president of the Colonial Confederation before George Washington became president under our Constitution. But it wasn't until 1789 that we introduced and promoted the idea of the Bill of Rights.
And freedom of the press, he said, is the only effectual guarding of every other right. When you hear those kind of things, you have to understand it's not freedom of the press when they say things you like or they say things that you believe in or they're being honest in a fashion that you think is being honest. It's the freedom of the press to do whatever they want to do. It's up to us to censor the press by walking away from them if they're not doing what we think is right. But they should not be forced to do anything.
Not only that, but the press was the one freedom that they could, in fact, investigate and disclose things to the public that nobody else could, because they had that freedom of speech, expression, investigate, and disclose. And the press had a high level of integrity.
Well, in some cases, I mean, yellow journalism and so on was some had high levels of integrity, but it's up to the people who the press have to make money. And the way they make money is by selling newspapers or whatever their media to you and me. And the only way to regulate that is for us to be intelligent and do our homework. And there's a lot of sources we can do that with. But if they get away with lying and cheating, it's because we allow it.
Yes, and by and large, the mainstream press had a great deal of integrity. Even if you remember the news from the 1950s and 60s, Walter Cronkite was highly respected because he had a certain amount of integrity, and we respected that he was telling us the truth. And prior to 1934, most newspapers were owned by small-town companies like the Boston Globe, the Washington Post, the New York Times. And it wasn't until 1934 that Congress authorized broadcast for profit, and that's when they became commercialized.
But see, I still believe it was for profit back then. There had to be money involved, or you couldn't buy the press, you couldn't buy the ink, you couldn't buy the paper.
That's true, but they had the Sears Roebuck ad in the newspaper. It wasn't bought by any company per se,
except Sears.
Well, they didn't buy the news; they just sponsored the printing of the paper. Different than today, you might say.
And of course, they wouldn't come in and said, "Well, if you print this, I don't think we're going to want to sponsor you anymore."
Again, I think the press had more integrity back then. We at least respected their integrity. But information and knowledge is power, and that power can be influenced.
That's absolutely, and that's where I'm going. My comments about Sears Roebuck, I don't have any idea what was happening back then, but what I can tell you about human nature, which is what we always explore on this show, is that as humans, we need to understand human nature and don't just automatically trust that the newspaper's being honest. Do your homework. Read other newspapers. Talk to other people. Investigate. If you don't do that, then you deserve what comes from a lack of in the press being having integrity.
Well, I think we all presumed, like I say, back when there were only three networks on television and Peter Jennings, Tom Brokaw, and Dan Rather told you the news, they had a very highly respect of the community for each of them and those networks, CBS, ABC, NBC. They were our primary source of press news off the air. Otherwise, it did come from the newspaper. But there were, by and large, a whole lot more newspapers than there were broadcast news.
There were. Newspapers was a much more mature technology than even TV news was at that time. TV news was kind of an incidental. Back then, it was even in the beginning 15 minutes, not even a half an hour. And so it was a technology that was relatively new. So newspapers held sway. Now we're seeing that, for instance, the internet is taking over, and both TV news and paper news are probably both going to eventually go by the wayside. TV news will probably morph into something more recognizable on the internet, but the medium will change. What will never change is that we hold them responsible for the for what they produce.
And we have to do that. We have to hold their feet to the wire, to the fire. In 1983, there were 50 companies handling news. That means just that what was coming out in newspapers and television, radio, and that was, what, 30 years ago?
And so what we're going to be talking about in a little while is going to be the FCC and the other ways that the government helps us keep the media honest. And that's where the problem lies. If they have to keep the media honest for us, it's because we're being lazy. We're letting them protect us. And freedom comes with a price. And when they take that price away, they're taking away the freedom as well.
During the Reagan administration, there was a lot of deregulation on ownership of media. And we didn't have cable TV then. It was still network news primarily. But it allowed GE, it was okay for them to buy RCA. Network was primarily ABC, NBC, and CBS. And news, the news part of those stations were not necessarily profitable. The press had evolved into being profitable by you buying the newspaper instead of it being given away and advertisers advertising to get it printed. But by and large, the news segment of ownership of networks was not profitable.
And see, I would contend that on a basic level, when the news became a for-profit operation, there was less need for them to be biased. But when it was produced by a bunch of people who donated money because they wanted to get a point across, that was more biased. And so I would contend that a for-profit news agency is a good thing. Because they're just there to produce the news, and they need to keep their listenership happy, which means they might produce the more sensational stories, and they could be completely dishonest, but they had less reason to be dishonest because they're not a bunch of people donating. They're just there to make money.
Well, in 1978, the Supreme Court gave corporations the right to advertise for political purposes. And this really was, the court felt it was their freedom of speech. But it opened the door to political campaigning funds being directed or controlled by corporations through their advertisement, which was not necessarily disclosed as an advertisement.
Which is another reason why government should not, again, it gets boring hearing me say this, but government should not be involved in anything because they can be manipulated, but they have badges. So when you manipulate them, then you have real power.
Well, the other thing is look at all the other governments in the past, like Germany under Hitler. He took control of the press. That often happens in these countries that are taken over by terrorists or tyranny of any kind. They first thing they do is shut down the free press, take over the news, so that they give you what they want you to hear. You control perception, you control outcomes, and propaganda becomes the spoon-fed item of the day.
And now what's really sad is that our press is being manipulated by the government, but they're kind of engineering their own manipulation. They're they're favoring one side or the other deliberately because the press has a political view.
Well, it goes back to 90% of the press is now controlled by six corporations.
But, I mean, a lot of these people, a lot of these biases are actually against corporations.
Yes, one corporation against another, one corporation that wants to support a particular political party or a social influence.
Green like, energy.
Right. Something else that is a social model that they want to get across. Look what happens when we have propositions in our ballot here in California. We get these horrific advertisements under some name committee or some agency, and it's nothing more than trying to get us to vote one way or another on a ballot.
That's
in,
right.
Initiative.
So the solution is for us to be vigilant, and I'm afraid that as a nation we've become much less vigilant. And this idea of the government protecting us and keeping the press and other entities from being dishonest is where the problem lies, because we become reliant on them, and they are inevitably corruptible. So now we're relying on someone to protect us from corruption, and the very protector is corrupt.
Well, let me give you the six names that control 90% of the press, and you think in your mind, what is the slant on the news you hear from those particular groups? Number one is Comcast, which was GE and is now NBC. Do you feel like you get an even balance of news all the time? Number two is Time Warner, which owns CNN and HBO. Number three is the News Corp, which is Fox. They also own the Wall Street Journal. Four is Viacom, which is, ironically, their biggest thing is MTV. Five is Disney, which owns ABC. And six is CBS.
And I'm sure this will probably annoy most of our listeners, if I'm understanding our demographics properly. But which of this list is actually just a news corporation?
Well, I don't think that there is such a thing, even though News Corp is the name of one of them. I do think that all of them have slant the news sometimes.
Oh, sure. I think they all do. What you have to look at is which of them are reporting what they call the straight news straight. And the only way you can determine that is, again, by doing your homework in an unbiased way. Most people will not do it in an unbiased way, but that's my pledge to you, is to do that.
A couple of other things. One, Clear Channel owns 1,200 radio stations. That's the beauty of this station. It is community radio. It is all about the community. We are not owned by anybody. We all volunteer. So our opinions are our own. And we have a website. We have email. You can contact us at kkrn.org and give us your opinions. And I want to, before we take a break, I want to mention one thing about whenever you hear someone being torn apart in the media, ask why and who benefits. And this will help you identify when you're being sold something.
And KKRN is community-supported radio, and it relies on the support of the community. So think about that and try to invest in your local community radio. They need to stay on the air. If you don't like our program, that's perfectly acceptable. But the way you do that is by supporting or not supporting us, but supporting the station always. And your support and your opinions when you call or when you email or when you go to the station are going to be what influences them to put what they put on the air. And they won't succumb to corporations and so on, because that's not how they're structured. We're going to go ahead and take that break again. And we'll be back on the air in just a couple of minutes. And I hope you're enjoying the program. This is KKRN 88.5 FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain.
Red roses too, I see them bloom for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself,
what a wonderful world.
It is a wonderful life, and you can find snippets of it on KKRN live shows, done by local volunteers and supported by you, our listeners and underwriters. You can contact our show at examinelife@kkrn.org, or if you want to financially support the radio station via underwriting for your company or by donation, call 530-337-1101.
I watch them grow, they learn much more than I ever knew, and I think to myself,
where can you find live radio theater today? On KKRN, of course. Wicked Fell Radio airs weekly on Thursday evenings from 8 to 8:30. Long enough to tell a good story and stimulate thoughtful conversation. Short enough to get on with your evening. Wicked Fell by Bill Shockley.
Welcome back to Examine Life. We've been talking about freedom of speech and press, and it's all leading up to, on February 26th, the government, the Federal Communication Agency, FCC, is going to have a hearing on net neutrality. And this is going to affect every single one of us. And this is where an agency of the government, they're not elected by us, but they are regulators, is going to decide about regulating the internet.
And as usual, they're just going to create chaos. But ostensibly what they're doing is they're concerned about the companies that give us access to the internet deciding who gets what bandwidth based on how much they pay or what kind of media they're producing. And what they really want to do is get the camel's nose under the tent and start controlling the internet, because for one thing, they're completely frustrated that they can't tax more. The internet's been the source of things like Bitcoin, which they can't tax, and people are able to sell drugs and horrible things, but also it gives them freedom from having their money controlled by the government. The Bitcoin is much less susceptible to inflation and things like that. And they hate the fact that they can't have control. So what you do is start by regulating the on-ramps to the information superhighway. And once you regulate that, you can start deciding who gets on there and what their content's going to be.
It's been said the ability to create new content and services on the internet without seeking permission from any kind of gatekeeper has enabled unprecedented innovation on the internet.
And think about the wonderful, wonderful beauty of the internet. Think about things like Wikipedia, which is not a managed thing run by college professors or any kind of professionals. It's volunteered. A lot of the information is voluntarily offered by them, but it's a wonderful source of very good information as a rule. And when bad information gets on there, the man who started it gave the figure that, generally speaking, that bad information is removed in less than 5 minutes. And this is all voluntary. This is the way the internet needs to work.
We don't need the government's finger into this. Every time you give them an inch, they take a mile.
Now, what they say they're trying to do is they don't want these corporations, which are out for a profit, deciding who gets what bandwidth. Well, I'm against any intervention whatsoever by the government, but if I had to accept their intervention, what I would say is, well, then why not just use all this money that you always say you want to build infrastructure with this tax money? And, of course, the infrastructure is never built. It just goes to the pockets of the guys that are friends with whoever's in charge at the time. But if you really believe that you just want to stop this business of more costs for more bandwidth, why not create a nationwide infrastructure that everybody can access free of charge? Now, if you do that, than people, because it's free, they'll abuse it and they'll be online all day long streaming their life when they go to the bathroom and visit their friends. So I don't want it to happen, but wouldn't that be a more honest way of doing this than to have the FCC start regulating things? Why not just make it free for everyone to have the bandwidth they want? But no, the way they're doing it, they can start getting control of content.
Well, the part that I worry about is they also have these two words, and they inevitably add two or three words to every regulation that is an escape hatch somehow. And these are commercially reasonable fees, which to me is like, okay, if I want to play video games all day and that's really high speed bandwidth, broad bandwidth, then I'll pay more to get it because it's commercially reasonable to charge me that.
And the way I feel it should be is leave the internet alone, leave the internet service providers alone. And if enough people want to have that bandwidth for gaming, they will make it affordable, because if they don't, they won't be able to make the profits they want to make. A few rich people is not going to get them where they want to be economically. So we pay for what we want, and when enough of us pay for it, the price goes down. That's always been the case. It's just like drugs. Sure, the rich people get all the great drugs in the beginning, but in the end, they're usually accessible to everyone.
And we cannot allow the government to now micromanage the internet. They've taken over micromanaging everything. They're now trying to micromanage the military through the latest bill that they've submitted. And now they're going to tie and micromanage our internet.
And, you know, part of what's on the internet is websites that will tell you everything you need to know about the government. And you can vet this information by doing your research on the internet and other places. And if they eventually get to the point where they control how the content gets onto the information superhighway, you can bet you won't be able to rely on those sources about the government anymore.
And their argument is the FCC Title II has to do with the Telecom Act, and that our internet service providers, ISPs, are not classified as any kind of general carrier. So what the ruling is, they want to now reclassify them as a telecom. And telecoms have the FCC controls what they carry.
So if you don't agree with the words, then just change the meaning of the words.
Exactly. And that's what they've done. They want to change the meaning of ISPs to be reclassified as telecoms. And then they FCC can control them.
So, you know, some of the big corporations that are on the internet, Google and Yahoo and you know, some of the larger internet providers of content believe that they want this because it looks to them, and I can't believe they're being this ignorant, but it looks to them like it would be to their benefit, because, of course, we know they wouldn't support it if they didn't think that. But in the end, they don't seem to understand the clear fact that government has to continue to intensify regulations wherever it has the regulations.
And part of the non-disclosed part of the way the government lies to us is not telling you the part of it they don't want you to remember. But under the law of common carriers, the FCC gives them absolute liability for goods and services carried by a telecom. So again, if Google or Amazon or Apple decide that they want certain content to go out and the FCC feels that that's not in the public's best interest, they can control it.
Now, some of the carriers, such as Facebook, you know, they've had situations where the content that their users are providing have caused problems socially or whatever the case may be, and they've changed their rules and policed it without having to have intervention. The natural way with people doing what they do always works best. People will eventually police themselves. There will always be ups and downs, but you can't prevent all of those. And when they try to, they usually make the ups and downs more severe.
And Google, Yahoo, a number of these companies have taken exception with the government's the number of court orders or requests they've had for information about users and content of what's being posted or what's email or whatever that's going on. These large companies have taken exception with the government, and yet here they are rapidly trying to get in bed with the FCC to control another portion of their industry.
I think it's just, you know, the people in the corporations looking out for what they consider to be the best for themselves and for the corporation. You know, the insurance companies did that with the Health Care Act. They were all on board for it because they were told that they were going to have an unlimited supply of captive customers, the patients, because everybody was going to have insurance. And so they were all for the Health Care Act. And now that they're seeing how many people are actually opting for Medicare or Medi-Cal or Medicaid, they're all of a sudden not supporting it so much. And, you know, these are companies that are not run by idiots, but they seem to not understand that human nature also governs how the government operates.
And the government only tells you what they want you to know at the time, and the rest gets hidden in the minor word changes that some other influential character has modified, and those two or three words make a dramatic change in the whole ruling.
And I wonder if the Congress does come up with a bill for net neutrality, if we're going to be told, well, we really need to get it passed so that we can see what's in it.
That and the FCC has the power to make this decision. That's why they're holding the hearings, is to modify this regulation.
And we didn't vote for them, did we?
No. It's like the EPA and the problems we have with CARB here in California now is these are agencies that now pass rules and regulations that become laws.
And, you know, it's just nature that agencies like that, in order to maintain their
funding.
Well, their funding and they want to remain relevant. To maintain their relevancy, they have to continue to regulate more and more. They can't just sit on their laurels or job done. We don't need them anymore. So they're going to need to come up with more and more in-depth regulation, not because they're evil, but just because bureaucracy is an animal that feeds itself.
And they don't answer to anybody.
The politicians start these agencies, but generally then they take on a life of their own, and the politician moves on to other things that will get them reelected and don't really pay attention to what this monster is doing that they've born.
And a lot of time these agencies are created to bypass the legislative process that needs the voters to approve or disapprove something. And by sending it off to an agency, guess what? They bypass all of that. And the law gets passed despite what the voters want.
And they just go on and move about, you know, doing other projects and kind of ignoring the agency that they've created. Look around at all the agencies and what they do. I know a lot of people ignore that and they're used to it and they put up with it. But understand that it's like the frog in the boiling water. You know, when you throw a frog in boiling water, he's going to leap out if he can. When you gradually heat up the water, he won't realize that it's fatal until it's too late. And when you have a little inconvenience caused by a new regulation, you need to look a little deeply at that and realize what it means, what the whole picture means, that when you give up a few little rights, think about the great experiences you have on the internet. You're taking it for granted right now because you're there every day. You have the access you want, the things that you... Anything you want to find there, you can generally find. Imagine that going away, even if it's gradual, and not having all the wonderful access to all of the information you have. And a lot of it is information that other people think is subversive or pornographic or mean or racist or sexist or anything else, but it should all stay there. And if you don't like what someone else is saying, make a statement of your own. But don't let a group of people with badges regulate it away from you.
And this is what's going on in China and Russia, the Middle East. They are taking away the access to the internet, or they're restricting it because they want to control their population. And this is one form of doing it. They're controlling, just like the press, shutting down the press and taking that over. They're going to spoon feed what they want them to know. And the evolution of the press is now the internet. That is our freedom of expression. That is where we get a lot of our news and information. And if the government wants to control how and what you receive, all they have to do is then control the internet.
So as these debates progress through the month of February and however long they take to probably inevitably taking over the internet, do your homework. Don't just watch ABC News, NBC News, Fox News, CBS News. Don't just go to the websites that say the things that people agree with you about. Go to the places where they disagree with you and make statements and make people angry, but do it with good argument, not with personal attacks. And watch this debate and listen to what they're saying, but listen to what all of them are saying, not just the ones that you like to listen to, and be part of this and understand what's happening, and don't just go along with it because you believe that your government will do what's right eventually or because you think it's inevitable and you can't change it. That's the worst thing that we have going for us, is many of us think our vote doesn't matter. They think that we don't have influence, but we do. It's just that each one of us has it, and that makes a collective statement, but we have to do it one voice at a time.
And you can do this by email to your senator, your assemblyman, your House of Representative. Go on the internet, put in your zip code and ask who your representatives are, and Google it. They'll tell you.
And speaking of email, we were talking about community-supported radio. I'm sure there are many parts of our program that some people don't agree with or lacks the quality. You can email us at examinelife@kkrn.org and make a statement about what you think about what we've said. And we don't have call-in primarily because it's Pat and I here on this show, and we don't have the expertise yet. We're still new at this game, and operating phones and taking calls is a bit of a challenge for us, but we will have them someday.
But we do want your input, and we also want you to take your opinion to your representatives, because they are the only ones that can affect this ruling by the FCC. Is they can put pressure on those agencies, we cannot. So you need to talk to your senator, and they do count the email. They may not respond to it, but they do count those in favor and those against certain things in the legislature.
Now, we both believe that term limits are the solution to most of these problems, because if you really start paying attention to your political news, you'll see that every move they make is a knee-jerk reaction to how is this going to affect my reelection. You take that reelection possibility away from them and watch all of their politics change. There will still always be some corruption, but pay attention and listen to what they're saying, and don't just agree because they're with a party that you like or something like that. Inform yourself. Follow this net neutrality as it's being proposed, and really pay attention so that when you write that senator or that congressman or the president, you're writing them with an informed opinion, not just what you heard someone say.
Not only that, but your right is to collectively, there are sites that you can go to and get a petition signed, but you want to have your voice heard, and it has to be heard intellectually or they will discount you as a crackpot. So take the time to find out what it is you're arguing for or against. And even if it's term limits, you're going to have to frame that into a phrase that they also are motivated by, which might be, let's control lobbyists, let's control special interest groups, and the only way we can do this is by term limits. And that's the only way we will ever get them, because these are the people that have to vote to implement them.
That's right. And when Pat said before that they do count the phone calls and the emails, they do. And so when you elect not to send an email, that takes away one from their count. This has been Examine Life on KKRN, 88.5 in Bella Vista at Round Mountain. And again, our email for our program is examinelife@kkrn.org. Please send us your opinions and tell us what you think. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with a new show. We hope you'd enjoyed tonight's show.
Good night. I'm Pat.
I'm Steve. And this has been Examine Life.